right, y'all. Welcome to another episode of the Unapologetically Black Gaming Podcast, the only podcast that's created by black gamers for black gamers. I'm your one of your hosts, the infamous hood rat with the heart of gold himself, Cortez Washington. And as always, I am joined by a special guest. This person is a IGDA scholar, a GDOC scholar. They are a gaming researcher. They are a narrative designer and a game writer. Please show some love for Adonna Ned.
Hello. Yep,
Do you want to go by your nickname?
Oh yeah, just Adonna is fine.
Adonna's fine. Okay, I was gonna say because I can throw out the AKAs out there too. how you doing today?
Good, thank you. Besides, yeah. This summer heat is getting ridiculous out here.
Yeah, it's cool where I'm at for today, but I know this weekend is gonna be brutal. So yeah, I understand. I completely understand. I lived in New Orleans for a long time, so every summer was hell. So I definitely. Whenever somebody brings up heat, I'm like, it brings me back to like war stories of trying to walk and take out my trash. But yeah, cool. All right. So we always start off the podcast with the hardest question of all. And that question is, what is your first game in memory? So like, what's the first game that you played that you were like, oh, like this is not necessarily going to be a career path, but like a hobby for you at first? Like, what's the first game that gave you that experience?
First game that gave me that experience would definitely be Sly Cooper, that series on PlayStation, because Me and my closest friends, we played that in a lot of Sonic games when we were younger. Mm-hmm. So just playing those games like so many times and like exploring like all the open worlds was just so, so much fun. Because I like played like some of the like arcade games, you know, like Street Fighter, mm-hmm. Galaxy and all that, but an actual open world game that you could explore stuff in, that blew my mind as a kid.
Yeah, that's dope. Sly Cooper is a slept on series. I feel like
they need to bring it back, like give us a remake. They did it with Jack and Daxter. Come on, man. Because I'm like, Come on, PlayStation. Yeah. You know that's a bag right there.
And all that's you gotta something. Do. And the thing is too, is like the art style is so easy. Like you can just remaster it and then that's it. All you gotta do is just port it. People will buy it. Like port it to the PS4. Ported PS5, whatever. Do whatever. I don't care. Just polish up the graphics, make it 60 frames per second. We good to go. You know, that's it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. That's the easiest $60 you ever made in your life, PlayStation. Come on now. But yeah, cool. That's what's up. Now I really want to get into like what is your origin story? Like, how did you get on this path of like being like such a multifaceted person within the gaming industry, whether that's narrative design, narrative, like games writing, like games researching too. Like, I really would love to hear that origin story, how you got on this path of like really honing in on all those skill sets.
Yeah, I started in games in a weird way because I started in games research before I got into the games industry proper. Mm. Because in college, I did a research program called the High School Inclusion Institute, which was looking to get people of color and to get a higher percentage of IT jobs and IT degrees. And part of it was you mm-hmm. have to do a research project. And one of the professors I worked with did a lot of game studies. And I was like, wait, you can do research on games? Because even though I played a lot of games as a kid, I didn't know it was something that people studied or those were actual jobs that people could actually like do. Yeah. So my research project was actually on how players of color, when they're playing multiplayer online games like Fortnite or Overwatch, and when mm-hmm. they buy the in-game skins, we were looking at how many skins do they buy and mm-hmm. if they were willing to pay more to look like themselves. Because mm-hmm. if you've played those games, you see there are not a lot of skins for people who are maybe have darker skin tones, maybe have box braids. So if you're trying to look like yourself, would you pay more to look like yourself? And what does that mean for games where when you're not the default, you have to pay to be represented? So that was a really, really interesting research project. And what we found out was that a lot of players don't try to look like themselves. The majority of players, we did a survey, we got 158 responses, and a majority of responses were players looking for mostly aesthetic purposes mm-hmm. instead of looking like themselves in real life. Like, they either liked how the colors looked, they either liked like the theme, like if it was like a holiday theme, like Halloween. But the same majority also agreed that there need to be more diverse representational options in games, which was also really cool.
Mm. Cool, 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 cool. Wow. So, when, like, that's very interesting that you were focused on that aspect of, like, looking at how people of color, like, really do they take that extra time, that extra step? Because it does seem like a disservice a lot of the times, you know, for us to have to kind of flesh out a little bit more or work a little bit harder to get those alternate skins that look more closer to our skin tone. And not only that, but like, I don't know if you've seen, like, I mean, the hairstyles too. Like we still are completely down.
There are more hairstyles than the flat top. There are more. We can do more.
Flat top, scalp braids, afro. That's the holy trinity.
And we can make them not look like that Shamar Moore wig from Diary of a Mad Black Woman. Because I've seen some bad hairstyles in games. I was like, come on, we can do better. We can do better. Like, I saw the new Spider-Man trailer and the way they have Miles looking, I was like, yes, this is where we need to be. We can do this.
Yeah, and it's not that hard. Like, honestly, they should take notes from, like, NBA 2K. NBA 2K gets the hairs right because they have to. Like,
because everyone, if there was an incorrect hairline, Twitter would be on fire.
Man, they would plummet. Their stock would plummet because, like, all the real niggas would be like, nah, we done. Look at this hairline. Why is your hairline a U? That don't make no sense. Upside down U. It's an arch. You got one of the McDonald's arches on your forehead. No, I'm done with this game.
If you have the Majin Vegeta hairline, no. Oh, get that out of here.
No, get that out of here. Yeah. But that's really interesting though, that like that led to like this pathway of yours. So like when it comes to like you with like when it comes to doing like games writing versus like narrative design, like what is your like mindset when it comes to being in that space of like, okay, I need to do like, because I know those are like people, it sounds similar, but I know they're like two entirely different roles. So like, what do you do to prep for each one when you try to like transition, or do you have to like, and a follow-up question is like, do you ever have to transition between the two when doing something?
Yeah, because a lot of the work I do is the indie space, I do a lot of balance with both, because games writing is like actual writing, like all the text, all the item descriptions, all the dialogue, developing characters, where narrative design is thinking about like, okay, this is the story, how is the player going to interact with this story? Are they going to see this in a quest line? Is a boss going to tell this to them? Is this going to happen during a boss battle, during some downtime between other characters? So it's like kind of like narrative design is like when you have to have like a 360 view of the game, if that makes sense, because you have to think of, okay, this is the music that's playing, this is what the player is looking at, this is the text the player sees, how are they experiencing this story, and is the player experience aligning with the experience that we want the player to experience?
I like that perspective of it. Yeah, because it's I feel like it's like, you know, when you think of like narrative design, or like when I interpret it, when I was just listening to you, but also looking at some other stuff too, is like, it is very much like a project manager kind of perspective of like, does this all flow together? And if this doesn't flow together, then like, you got to go talk to the specific people to like change it up and fix it. But like for you, it's like, oh, I wrote this, and then you got to take a step back and be like, hey, Adana, that doesn't make any sense. Like, or hey, oh, that could work, but like in the context of the situation, it just can't work right now, you know? Like, and I know that a lot of projects you work on but the projects you've worked on, like some visual novels and some of those aspects, how's that different from like working on a visual novel to like another kind of game too for you?
So for visual novels specifically, that's a lot more narrative focused, because usually in a visual novel, you have the visuals, which is the art, and you also have the story, and that's really it. There's not really as much interactivity as like an open world game like Breath of the Wild or Sly Cooper. So you have to work a lot harder to make the visuals and the story work well together, because since players are so focused on the story, it's a lot easier to see when things are like falling apart. Whereas with like an open world game like Breath of the Wild, you don't necessarily have to worry about the story being as cohesive, since players usually run around and do things in a random order.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and that seems like that's much more of a more strenuous process then, right? Of just like trying to make sure that the story makes sense no matter what time, if it's an open world, when they come in contact with that specific area or specific quest line, you have to make sure that that still is like still able to be a immersive experience.
Yeah. And something that players can still engage in, and especially in visual novels, the pacing is like really, really important, because you don't want a player to get bored halfway through and go, okay, the story sucks, go play something else, because the story is all they really have to keep them engaged and going. So making like an engaging story, figuring out the pacing so that the player I want to know what happens next, I want to see how all these routes end, instead of them getting bored halfway through and going, okay, I'll do something else, because there's just so many games available to choose from. So you want to make sure the time that players engage with your game is something that they enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You don't want to have it's easier in games for you to find out whether or not you like it in comparison to like a book or like a novel, because of that experience, like that immersiveness of like being engrossed in that storyline and the visuals and all that. Whereas like a book, like sometimes you get halfway through it and then you realize it's not good. And then it feels unfortunate, because you feel like, damn, I wasted either a good afternoon or a few days, you know, trying to read this book. It does sound a little bit more challenging too, to make sure like you once you get them hooked in, you keep them hooked in, and making sure that you flesh it out. And it's like more like in the character development itself too, sounds so stressful. Like when you're doing a lot of writing, are you writing like more by yourself, or are you bouncing ideas off someone else? Like what's some processes that you've been through that have been pretty interesting?
So it depends on the team, but for games I worked on, usually it's like whatever the plot is, maybe each writer will either have a certain section of the plot or a certain group of characters that they work to develop. So that way the biggest difficulty with working with multiple writers is getting a voice that sounds cohesive, because everyone's writing style is different. So after all the writing's done, there also needs to be a style pass to make sure, okay, this route still is unique, it sounds great, but it still has the same like tone.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's dope. So I know you are currently on a project that is really cool, that I've been keeping track on for a little bit. It is called, and the game is slipping my head, even though I wanted to ask you about it. Oh, Spirit Swap, Low Beats to Match 3-2.
Yes.
Yeah, that's super fucking dope. And it looks super fucking cool. Like, how did you get on that project? And like, what are some things you can like tell the audience about the game too, that isn't revealing too much?
Yeah, Spirit Swap was a project I was really excited for. I was like following the Kickstarter, I was in the Discord. It was really, really great to see a project that had like people that looked like me. And also they were just like vibing, you know, there's like, we gotta save the world from like 8 evil dragons or something. It's just like fun. It's chill. It's vibing. And then the director, Alex, reached out to me because they were looking for another writer. And I was someone who was super excited about the project. It was like surreal to go from someone who just followed it on Kickstarter to someone who is actually working on the game.
Yeah, that's so cool. That I feel like that's the coolest feeling, is like going from like the fan, like fanning out, to like being like, oh, I'm in this now. Okay, now I got to shape it. Was there like any pressure that you felt on your end from like going from fan to like being on the team to like make it the best you could, or like feel like unnecessary pressure from yourself, like the fan side of you?
There was definitely a lot of like pressure on myself, because I felt like, okay, this is like your one shot to show that you're like a real games writer. And I had like a lot of pressure. Really grateful for the team for like getting me to relax a little bit more, because I was like putting like 110%, and everyone was like, you should maybe chill a little bit, because I definitely have the tendency to go overboard with projects sometimes. So sometimes I need to rein myself in a little bit, balance writing everything. So it's not like writing like a million things and trying to do a million things at once, even though it was fun learning about other aspects of the game, like how like testing out some of the different CPUs players can go versus. It was all really, really fun.
That's super cool. Damn, that sounds so dope. I know there isn't like a release date for that on Steam, but do you know is there like a soft launch? I don't want you to reveal too much.
Have a demo that was released for Summer Games Fest that it's going to be available until the game's launch.
Nice. Just
so if any of the listeners are interested, you can play that, see some of the story me and my fellow writers worked on. That's fun, and there should be some news soonish about release, hopefully. So keep following, check it out on Steam, follow Soft Mavic on Twitter. Just keep an eye out for all the announcements, as we have some fun stuff coming up.
Super, that's super cool, super cool. I also was combing through your portfolio, and I've seen you worked on a game for the Playdate console, which is actually pretty cool because it's like a crank console or something like that. I'm familiar, but also super excited because it's something different. So could you explain that a bit, and also if you have had a chance to play with it, can you describe the experience?
Yes, I worked on Recommendation Dog for the Playdate with Sweet Baby Ink. They're a narrative design company that work with other studios and teams in order to get games and writers for those games. So that was pretty fun. It was especially interesting because with that game, we were actually like building everything from scratch. So it was like Spirit Swap, when I started, there was already like a rough idea of like the plot, what characters, character arcs. And with Recommendation Dog, we like, this is the idea. We're going to flesh this out and see how it goes. So like seeing the game going from nothing to something in like a few months was a really, really cool experience, especially since it was on the Playdate, which was a console I'd never heard of before. So seeing all of the different ways that you could like use the crank as a game mechanic and also trying to work around the constraints of that as well was also really, really cool.
Nice. Man, that's so cool to like have a console, because that's like, because it's rare to like come across a console you haven't really interacted with, like especially in this now, at least now, like back in the day it was different, you know, especially like the early days of like gaming itself, like in the 70s and 80s, there were a fucking 15 to 20 different consoles out, so like of course you were like, oh, I've never really get experienced this. But now it's like really some like really like the big three and then some other ones. So the Playdate coming out with this new owned concept and thing like that, that sounds so cool that you had a chance to experience that and really get a feel of that. But speaking of games, are there any games right now that you're playing that really got your attention?
I have put so many hours in Tears of the Kingdom.
Okay.
It's been such a great game. I actually went up to the launch in Nintendo New York with a friend of mine.
Oh, that word. Was
really, really fun because they had the entire like Nintendo New York, it was decked out in all this Legend of Zelda stuff. We got to get the special edition of the game that was sold out everywhere else. It was it was like a 3-hour waited line, but it was worth it because it was really cool to just see like all the decorations they put out. And also just chatting with other fans in line here, like, oh, I've been playing Legend of Zelda since the 90s, and oh, Breath of the Wild was my first Zelda game, but I loved it so much I had to get the sequel. So it was just a really, really great time, and you can like see like all the work that like the developers put in to make sure this like tops the experience of Breath of the Wild, because I've seen a lot of people say, oh, I can't go back to Breath of the Wild after this because there is just so many like changes, quality of life changes, and even though the map is the same, so many things have changed. It's like, oh, I have to explore every corner to see every new thing that's happened. It's great.
Yo, that sounds so amazing. I haven't gotten Tears of the Kingdom yet. I need to. I've been waiting because I got an extensive backlog to knock out, but like that sounds so dope and sounds so fun of experience. And I just miss hearing about like the launch, the game launches. You know how like places used to like really decorate, like GameStop and places used to really go all the way out for the game launch. And now to hear that, that warms my heart so much. Because it makes you, I feel like it makes you like want to play it more because you have such a more immersive experience of like,
yeah, like the excitement around, I don't think they've seen this much excitement around a game launch since like seeing all my friends react to Hades like a few years back, because I had so many friends that were into it. I was like, I don't really like roguelikes, I'll play it anyways. And then I was like, then I put like 24 hours in my first week. It was really great.
Yeah, that's cool. Oh, are there any games that are coming out soon that you're really interested in?
I'm hoping they announce another Pokemon Legends game soon, because I know that Pokemon Scarlet and Violet came out, which was nice. That was fun. But yeah. I had so much fun playing Pokemon Legends Arceus. Like, that was the most fun I've had playing a Pokemon game in, like, decades. I was like, this is how I felt as a kid playing, like, the original Diamond and Pearl on my DS. And I'm just waiting. I was like, they have to be making another one. Please. I'm also excited. Well, I'm excited for Spider-Man. I just need to find a PlayStation so I can PlayStation 5 so I can actually play it. But yeah, it looks really, really cool. And I'm really hoping with like Spider-Verse coming out, we'll get like some cool alternate skins of like the different spider people. I think that would be really great.
Yeah, that'd be dope. That sounds, yeah. Oh, the alternate skins. That's going to be so amazing. Yeah, I'm finishing up my playthrough through Spider-Man PS4. Because I got Miles Morales for my PC and I'm getting ready to play that, but I wanted to finish, I wanted to 100% Spider-Man on my PS4 to get to that point. So, but it sounds like, yeah, sounds like that. I mean, I've seen trailers and stuff. It looks great. And like the Pokemon too, like Arceus was really such a breath of fresh air for that series.
It was like, so good. I remember I was like, at first I was like, I don't really know what this is, but then seeing how like excited my friends were playing it, I was like, okay, I'll try a little bit. And then I was like, after like 3 hours, I was like, this is the best Pokemon game ever. This is everything I've ever wanted.
Nice, man. Yeah, I always seen it and I was like, this looks cool. I didn't buy it, but I was like, this looks cool. And I think now that everybody's on the new ones, I think I'm like, all right, I think I should get it now just to play it on my free time and have some one-on-one time with it. I don't know why I like doing that. I like waiting till games hype die down and then I just buy it. So like, it really interests me in that way rather than like buying it as a hype. Cause I think the last game I bought when it was hype was Outriders. And I was like, man, I wasted $60.
So. Oh no, that's the worst feeling when you buy a game when you're like, well, that's $60. I'm never getting back.
Yeah. Cause you can't return it. You trade it in. It's going to be half of that, but like in-store credit, it's just all bad. Yeah.
Just I remember when I got Sonic Frontiers, like everyone was saying how good it was. And after playing it for like 5 minutes, I was like, I feel so bad. Cause I can't get into it. I was like, this feels like too Breath of the Wild-y and not like Sonic-y enough, because I'm like, I don't want to be running around in realistic stuff. I want to be running around in like wild little zones like Mania or Sonic Rush Adventure.
Yeah. I've tried that. I know I'm gonna probably get stoned in the streets for saying this. I've tried The Witcher 3 like 4 different times and it just never catches me, and it's upsetting because I've played like a good 3 to 4 hours of it, you know, so I've gotten like really immersed in it, but it just never really caught on, and I wonder if it's just me. So
yeah, and it's also harder because when you're gaming as an adult, you don't have the free time that you used to, so it's like you have to actually prioritize your backlog, which is horrible for me because I love JRPGs.
Yeah.
Since I have so many of those, I'm like, well, that's 75 hours of my life I'm never getting back. Oh, I need to get through the Persona games because I know they're good. I'm so tired. I was like, I need to play something that requires zero brain power, which is why I've been playing so much Breath of the Wild and Splatoon.
Yeah, that you do have to grab those because, like, yeah, you can't really. Oh, it's. the love-hate relationship I have with RPGs, especially like long RPGs, I love them so much because they are engrossing, but it's like, I just don't have, like you said, you just don't have the time to sink into games like that. And I wish I did, but I just don't. Like, I like a good 20-hour story. Like, you give me a good 20-hour story and I'm like, damn, that was good. I might play it again later. Like, okay. But like, if your story's like 80, 90, I'm like, oh God. I love it, but it's just like, I got to keep going and keep going and keep going. And I got,
nothing gets you out of gaming like that laundry beeping. But
yeah,
I remember when I like got Persona 5 for Switch, played through like the whole tutorial, like dungeon in like 2 days. And then like, I haven't touched it since. And I was like, it's not that it's a bad game. I'm just tired. Yeah. That was like 8 hours of playing. And that was just the tutorial. So now I got to start all the social links. I got to talk to all these people. I got to jump all the monsters. I was like, I'm doing better time management in Persona than with my actual life. And I was like,
yeah,
it's time for a break.
Yeah. What game was I playing? I was playing something recently that really got me to do that. Oh, I was playing the Outer Worlds because I got the, what you call it, version, the Spacer Choice edition for free through the Humble Choice. And that one's shitty. It's just, it's like they, I don't know what Private Division did, but they really fucked that up. This like the game, like the frame rate is all whack. It's all weird. So I just played the one on Game Pass and I was stuck in that one little, I was stuck on a groundbreaker. Even after I did all the stuff, I was still doing stuff on there. And I was like, yo, I need to put this down because I'm going to spend another 5 hours doing this. And I have to prepare for work tomorrow. I can't do this. But yeah, it's just, it's a very strained relationship, especially as an adult with gaming. But so we're getting close to the end of the episode, and this is the time where I let the guests do some words of affirmation, some giving off some positive vibes to the listener. So I'm gonna take a step back, and if you have any words of affirmations you like to, you know, repeat to yourself, or anything motivational or inspirational you heard recently that you want to share with the world, now's your time.
Something motivational. As a creator, definitely taking things one step at a time, because I know the world's kind of on fire right now, especially with all the AI stuff and everything going on. So take a deep breath, take things one day at a time. It's hot outside, don't be stressing. That's all I got. I'm horrible at these.
No, that was great. That was amazing. Take it one day at a time, you know, and don't be in the heat. It's hot. I love that. Those are amazing. Last question I got for you. This is actually the hardest question I have at all the time. Give me 5 games that you think every gamer should play.
5 games every gamer should play.
Or every gamer should know about.
Every gamer should know about. Well, Sly Cooper series for sure.
All right. The whole series is one. Let's go.
And then Hades, highly recommend it. Even if you don't like roguelikes, just play it. Just play it for a little bit. It's so good. And all the characters are hot, so it's even better. What else? I'm trying to think of games that aren't too long, because part of me wants to say Dragon Quest XI, because that game was excellent. That was also 65 hours. That's long. But, other games people should know about. Fire Emblem Awakening is great. They really need to just hurry up and bring it to Switch, because that was one of the best 3DS games. What else? So that's 3. I'm trying to think of fun games, because I was like, Tears of the Kingdom, everyone's playing that every day. That don't count. Trying to think of more. Kingdom Hearts, yeah, everyone's also playing that. This is weird, but I'm gonna say Tetris is fun. It's cool. I love me some good Tetris. And the last game I would say is Spirit Swap. Play Spirit Swap when it comes out.
Yeah. Yeah, there we go. Yeah. And yes, Tetris, low key, hey, Tetris to Spirit Swap, that was a good transition. I love that. I love that. Adana, thank you so much for being on the show. Where can the people find you on the socials, and what can they expect if they tune into your content on the socials, but also what can they expect for some of the games from games you got coming out soon?
Yes, you can follow me at Twitter if it hasn't exploded by the time this episode comes out. It's at AFNNarratives8. That's at AFNARRATIVES8. That's me on Twitter. I'm also the same on Blue Sky and on TikTok. I have like 3 TikToks. I should make more TikToks, but that's where you can find me. You should also check out Spirit Swap and Kiss You on Steam and itch.io. They're both games I worked on. They both have demos that you can play right now. Highly recommend them. They're both very fun. And if you follow me, you'll also see any events I'll be speaking at, like DreamCon and PAX West this year. So if you say hey.
Yes.
And yeah.
Amazing. Yes. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Thank you so much again. And if you want to follow us on the socials, we are at UBGPod on Twitter and Instagram. And as always, thank you so much for listening to this episode. And always remember, be happy, drink some water, and keep gaming.